Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On today's Your Call, we continue our week-long series on toxic chemicals by talking about what's lurking in our homes. Our homes harbor countless chemicals that may pose serious health and environmental risks. There are flame retardants on couches, rugs, and clothes, lead in old pipes, and BPA in canned foods and plastic containers. More than 80,000 chemicals in the United States have not been adequately tested for their health and environmental effects, according to the Natural Resources Defense Council. We talked extensively about why this is the case on Monday's show. You can find it at yourcallradio.org. You can also find our whole series there. So today we are talking about the risks associated with common household products. How can we reduce toxins in our home and the environment? Joining me to talk about toxic chemicals is Dr. Arlene Bloom. She's the founder and executive director of the Green Science Policy Institute. The Institute encourages scientists around the globe to take their research and use it to make a difference. Dr. Bloom is a biophysical chemist and visiting scholar at UC Berkeley's Department of Chemistry. Her research contributed to the regulation of two cancer-causing flame retardants used in children's pajamas back in the 1970s. And Dr. Arlene Bloom joins us from the Graduate School of Journalism at UC Berkeley. Hi, Arlene. Welcome to the show.
I'm delighted to be speaking with you.
Well, I am delighted to have you. You have been doing groundbreaking work on flame retardants since the 1970s. And I actually just got a Facebook message from a friend, John, who said that his parents actually bought him toxic pajamas back then. And then they found out what happened because of your work. And luckily, he didn't wear them. So can you first off talk about your early research and how you discovered that children were wearing toxic pajamas?
Well, I'm also a mountain climber, and back in the 70s, a friend died climbing who was an early environmentalist, and in his memory, I wanted to do something to help the environment. And I learned that the pajamas that almost all children in America were wearing at that time were about 10% by weight a flame retardant called Tris. And we did an experiment where we found a little girl whose mom had bought her pajamas in England, so she'd never worn Tris-treated pajamas. And we put her in the Tris-treated pajamas, and the next morning we found Tris breakdown products in her urine, which meant that the Tris got into the child. And then we did an experiment to see if the chemical changed DNA. Was it a mutagen? And it was one of the strongest mutagens we'd ever studied. But in those days, we wrote a big lead article in Science magazine. It was on all three TV networks. And 3 months later, it was banned from kids' pajamas, which is how things should be.
That's amazing. And it's incredible. And we've been talking about this over the last couple of days. Yesterday, we talked about chemicals in our everyday lotions and shampoos and body products. So you found a girl who never wore these toxic pajamas before, and then the day after you found Tris in her urine. So what does that tell us about the power of these chemicals to enter our bloodstream?
Well, first, I just want to say, going back to what you dealt with on Monday, foods, drugs, and pesticides, chemicals that go into our mouths, go into our bodies, are regulated. We might argue about how well, but they are regulated. But then the other chemicals, as you know, are only covered by TSCA, and it's like there's a belief they don't go into our bodies. But what we saw was that chemicals make our way into our bodies. It's often through dust. So flame retardants, for example, come out of products, drop into dust. You get dust on your hands, you eat a sandwich, and they're inside your body. So just to say, a big hint for people always is avoiding dust. You know, doing things to reduce dust can reduce exposure.
And TSCA is the Toxic Substances Control Act of 1976.
Right, that you talked about in your first program. But, you know, one other thing I just wanted to say. At the beginning, you talked about the 80,000 untested chemicals, which sounds terrifying, and nobody can cope with it, and you put your head down and you think, oh, my God, what can I do? But we have found that there are really only a handful of families of chemicals that contain the great majority of the chemicals of concern, and that you can actually understand what those families are and reduce their use and be healthier. So it's, to our mind, thinking about 80,000 chemicals is overwhelming. But we have a website called sixclasses.org, actually, and you can go there and learn in about 15-minute lectures about each of the six classes and really reduce their use, reduce your exposure. So we feel actually more optimistic about solving this problem. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm so glad you brought that up because you're right. When you say 80,000, it sounds overwhelming. And a lot of people say, well, I'm just going to do the best I can. But yesterday, for example, we learned that there is still lead in lipstick. There is formaldehyde in face cream. And a lot of people wonder, how is this still allowed? Because even though you did amazing work back in the 70s, and that TRIS was ultimately banned, we still have flame retardants in everyday couches, chairs, things that we don't, that are ubiquitous in our homes. So how is this still allowed?
Well, the good news is indeed TRIS was banned from kids' pajamas in the 70s. And I personally went off and climbed mountains and had a family for about 25 years. And 10 years ago when my daughter started college, I came back and discovered that the same TRIS that we'd gotten out of kids' pajamas was in the nation's furniture. So furniture in those days, about 10 years ago, 5% of the weight of the foam in our furniture was TRIS or a similar chemical. But it was there to meet a standard that was not a good standard. It wasn't providing a fire safety benefit. And I won't tell the whole story now. It took almost 10 years, but starting January 1st, 2015, if anybody goes to the store to buy a couch in California, it will have a label that says it does or does not contain flame retardants. They're no longer needed, and the foam industry is really not putting them in. So virtually nearly all the new furniture now does not contain flame retardants. So this is a big improvement, which came from changing a standard that wasn't a good standard.
Oh, wow. Okay, because when this got a lot of attention a couple of years ago, there was a labeling, and which is great news, but a lot of people said, well, why is this still being used? But you're saying that most new furniture does not have flame retardants.
Yeah, and so flame retardants, unlike the other chemicals that I would love to talk about next if we have the chance, flame retardants are there because of flammability standards. And if there's a law that says you've got to meet this standard and the only way you can do it is with flame retardants, manufacturers have to use flame retardants. And because of the weakness of our regulation, nobody checks if they're healthy or not. And indeed, as you probably know, when TSCA passed in the 70s, 60,000 chemicals were grandfathered. Like TRIS wasn't used in kids' pajamas, but it was grandfathered so it could be used in furniture and nobody could regulate it. So, but the good news is the flame retardants were not providing a benefit. And Jerry Brown actually said we have to reduce harmful chemicals in our furniture. And the agency, the bureau that's in charge of it, was able to change the California standard so that we now have increased fire safety without flame retardants. And if you want, I can tell you how that works.
Yes.
Okay. So the deal is the standard before said that the foam inside the furniture had to not burn for 12 seconds when exposed to a very small flame. And the only way you can do that is you would make the foam 5%, even 10% flame retardant. And the ones they used, unfortunately, were all known to be toxic. However, fires start in fabric. So if you drop a candle on your couch, the fabric burns, you have a big flame, the foam burns. With flame retardants, you get more toxic soot and smoke, toxic gases, no benefit. So the new standard says, let's stop fires in the fabric. Let's stop smoldering fires, cigarette fires. Those are the most common ones. And you can stop fires in the fabric without flame retardants. So you don't put flame retardants in the foam. The fire never reaches the foam, which is flammable. And you have greater fire safety and no flame retardants. And that's what we have now. So it's a really win-win for everybody.
All right. And I mentioned this yesterday, but if you want to learn more about the history of flame retardants in California, the documentary Merchants of Doubt is an amazing film that looks at the groundbreaking work done by reporters at the Chicago Tribune who uncovered the lobby groups that were behind the push to keep flame retardants in furniture. And that is Dr. Arlene Bloom. She's the founder and executive director of the Green Science Policy Institute. They encourage scientists around the globe to take their research and use it to make a difference. Dr. Bloom is a biophysical chemist and visiting scholar at UC Berkeley's Department of Chemistry. And now I would like to bring Samara Geller into the conversation. Samara is a data analyst with the Environmental Working Group. That's a nonprofit working to protect human health and the environment. Hi, Samara. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. So Dr. Arlene Bloom said something really important. She said that 80,000 chemicals is really hard to get your head around. She said it's important to point out that really a handful of chemicals are cause for concern. Do you agree with that? And can you talk about the chemicals that cause you the most concern?
Well, that's a great question. What I can speak to is our Guide to Healthy Cleaning. In 2012, we launched our Guide to Healthy Cleaning to really pull back the curtain on secrecy. Right now, there's virtually no federal or state regulations that require manufacturers of cleaning products to disclose exactly what's in those products. And we find that really troubling. Although there are a number of voluntary initiatives and there's a lot of movement in this area towards improving disclosure, there's a lot of laggards and transparency is still overwhelmingly lagging. And so we recently put out an update for spring to our cleaner's guide, and we analyzed thousands of product labels and scoured those company web pages so that we could reveal as much about those products as possible and the hazards in the chemicals used in those formulations.
So this is kind of amazing. You looked at 2,500 products, and almost half of the products were rated poor on ingredient disclosure. And so you get these very vague terms like dyes, colorants, colors, instead of listing the specific chemical dyes. So you found that two dyes that were sometimes listed are known as FD&C Yellow 5 and FD&C Red 40, and these may cause allergic reactions or be contaminated with impurities known to cause cancer. And I notice this because sometimes buying laundry detergent, for example, you have to peel back the label, and sometimes it's really vague, and you often wonder, are there more ingredients in here, or what does this word actually mean?
Exactly. It's very disturbing. So we found almost 40% of the products in our guide were able to get that good disclosure rating, but the vast majority are really not being as transparent in terms of revealing what's in the product. So you'll have these ingredients listed as dye or colorant, or sometimes they'll use the term fragrance or also surfactant, and these terms really hide hundreds of different chemicals. So dyes and colorants and colors is particularly troubling. FD&C Yellow 5 and FD&C Red 40, as you mentioned, may cause allergic reactions or be contaminated with these impurities that are known to cause cancer. So it's really difficult for people to avoid these things if they're being hidden by these vague terms like colorants and colors. A lot of people are sensitive to fragrance in products, and so we find that being really transparent about those essential oils and those specific ingredients is really important.
And Dr. Bloom, as Samara said, there are no federal or state regulations that require manufacturers to be upfront about all of the ingredients in the product. Has that always been the case?
Yes, I'm afraid transparency is really lacking in our products, and it's a first step for healthier products. If you don't know what's in something, you can't really make good choices.
So what chemicals in everyday products concern you the most, Dr. Bloom?
So the classes that we are concerned with are, first of all, fluorinated stain repellents. I don't know if people realize that Scotchgard is one of the most harmful chemicals ever made, and it's in pretty much everybody on the planet. The fluorinated chemicals, the carbon-fluorine bond is the strongest in the periodic table, and these molecules never break down, like for a million years. And the ones that have been studied cause cancer, high cholesterol, and a whole range of harmful effects. And we believe that when a chemical is similar to known harmful chemicals and there is little or no data about it, its use should be avoided. So we wouldn't say ban, but we would say only use these chemicals if you absolutely need them. So the outdoor industry uses them a lot, and we would say, well, if you're climbing Mount Everest, maybe you need these chemicals, but do you need it in your bathing suit or your surf shorts to go to the beach?
Wow.
And so we actually have called for a 50% reduction in the use of the most harmful families of chemicals, which we think can be achieved just by asking the question, do you really need it, and providing information.
These are stain repellents?
Yes, water repellents and stain repellents. So if you say to a mom, you can have a really great stain repellent carpet, but that chemical is going to be in your baby's body for decades and on the planet for a million years, and it's likely to be toxic, you know, that mom might decide she doesn't need that degree of stain repellency. And a number of major manufacturers now have stopped adding these chemicals, the whole family, anything with a carbon-fluorine bond, because the unfortunate thing that happens is one chemical gets banned, and then the substitute is the chemical cousin, which is almost identical, but about which we have no information, and then there are claims that it's safe, and after a long time it gets banned, and then there's the second cousin with similar claims that it's safe. And so we believe in these certain classes where every chemical that's been studied has been seen to be harmful. And these classes often are chemicals that just don't break down. And if chemicals stay around a long time, people will be allergic, they'll cause harm. So anyway, we think by learning about these harmful families and particularly encouraging manufacturers and retailers not to use whole families, you can have much healthier products. Right. And that's actually happening. That's the good news.
Dr. Arlene Bloom is founder of the Green Science Policy Institute. Samara Geller is data analyst with the Environmental Working Group. Today, we are continuing our week-long series on toxic chemicals by talking about what's lurking in our homes. And if you have any questions about chemicals and everyday products, chemicals in clothing or on furniture, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And we have a question about cleaning products. Let's hear from Regina in San Francisco. Hi, Regina. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. Thanks. So I own and operate a health-based cleaning service here in San Francisco, and my motto is use the least toxic product that works. And for me, it has to work every bit as well as any toxic product out there, or else I couldn't run my service. So for almost all my routines, I use Castile soap, which is made from all natural ingredients, meaning they list all the ingredients on their label, and they even have some brands have organic ingredients right now. I use it as an all-purpose cleaner. It cleans almost everything, all your washable surfaces, and so especially for routine cleaning, it's great. It's one of the very few products with no petrochemicals in it at all, or synthetic ingredients. And I understand that plenty of petrochemicals are not dangerous for you health-wise, but still, if there's they have a bigger environmental footprint, and I'd rather, if I have a choice, I'd rather use something that's completely plant-derived, and because I don't have time to research all the ingredients like most consumers.
Right.
Cleaning products like I think was already talked about, they don't have to list their ingredients on their label. So that's easy and simple. And I just put in 16 ounces of water in a spray bottle. I just put 1 or 2 tablespoons of Castile soap and just use it like 409 or Fantastic. And it's wonderful. Some have essential oils that smell really good if you like that. And you can also buy one that's with no essential oils if you're sensitive to essential oils. So I love it. It's great. And I also want to say about vinegar and baking soda, they're really widely recommended for as all-purpose cleaners, but they're not. There's a chemistry reason. Baking soda and vinegar have really limited uses. I do use baking soda for like if I need to scour a tough spot and maybe with a little soap and also, but then it'll leave a little bit of baking soda residue. So instead of rinsing and rinsing and rinsing, using a lot of water, I just spray it with a little vinegar and water, and it's gone. It's totally neutralized. And so you can save water that way, too.
Well, thank you for calling in, Regina. I know a lot of people are doing their DIY laundry detergent or DIY cleaning products. Samara, there's also talking about labeling. Last year, EWG and the Breast Cancer Fund co-sponsored legislation in California to require manufacturers to disclose ingredients on labels for most household products, but the bill failed to advance past an assembly floor vote. What happened?
So that is correct. Unfortunately, it did fail to get past this assembly floor vote. We were really hopeful that we could muster enough support for the bill. EWG is continuing to work on this issue. However, we're not giving up on the fight to improve disclosure for cleaning products. We really feel it's the best way at informing consumers about the potential hazards in the cleaning products. We want that listed right there on the label at the point of sale, where it's going to be really informative so people can make those buying decisions on the spot. A lot of people don't have access to smartphones, so they might not be able to look up ingredients on the website, and so we're encouraging folks to continue to apply pressure on the brands and those companies to make sure this is up on their radar and important. It's important for a lot of people so they can avoid chemicals that are sensitizers. A lot of the chemicals in fragrance can sensitize individuals, and in order to stop that sensitization, you have to avoid that ingredient. And right now, there's no laws requiring the disclosure, so you wouldn't know if that particular ingredient is in that product.
Right. And we talked about the lobbying by the chemical industry. Over the past 4 years, the major companies like Dow, DuPont, and Koch Industries spent $245 million to lobby politicians in Washington. What does that look like at the state level?
So, that is a great question. There is obviously a lot of industry opposition to improving ingredient disclosure. We do have a lot of companies, however, that are fully on board and fully disclose already. We have standouts like Seventh Generation that have been fully disclosing their ingredients for years. We also have lesser-known companies like Aspen Clean, a number of products out there that people can turn to that are voluntarily disclosing all of this information. But you do have a lot of brands that are hiding behind CBI or confidential business information. So you'll have particular chemicals, particular preservatives or fragrance or colorants that are still not fully listed out. A lot of that is protected as proprietary information. And, the sad thing is that in industry, it's widely known that competitors sort of know each other's formulas and can break them down, and the only people who are being sort of disinformation is being withheld from are the consumers. So that's really troubling.
Samara Geller is data analyst with the Environmental Working Group, a nonprofit working to protect human health and the environment. And Dr. Arlene Bloom is founder and executive director of the Green Science Policy Institute. They encourage scientists to take their research and use it to make a difference. Dr. Bloom is a biophysical chemist and visiting scholar at UC Berkeley's Department of Chemistry. And she made a great point earlier in the show. We've been talking about the 80,000 chemicals in the United States that have not been adequately tested for their health and environmental effects this week. And Arlene Bloom says we really need to be most concerned about a handful of chemicals. So what do you want to know about the chemicals lurking in your home? We'll be back after this.
Your call on Local Public Radio, KALW, San Francisco. Lots of ways that you can join in today's conversation. You can send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org, feedback@yourcallradio.org, or join the conversation live on the telephone at 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK. Coming up in 30 minutes at 11, the BBC's World Have Your Say, and then at noon today, it's John Perry. No, no, it's not. It's Ira Glass and This American Life. This is KALW San Francisco.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will continue our series on toxic chemicals by focusing on our food system. We are exposed to a cocktail of chemicals, additives, and pesticides in the food we eat. So what toxins are used to produce our food? What are their health and environmental effects? That's tomorrow. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. And if you have any questions about the chemicals lurking in your homes, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. On Monday, we talked about the Toxic Substances Control Act and why so many chemicals are not regulated. And then yesterday, we talked about everyday body care products, things that we put on our bodies, shampoos, lotions. You can find those shows at yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about what's in our homes with Dr. Arlene Bloom, founder of the Green Science Policy Institute, and Samara Geller, data analyst with the Environmental Working Group. And we have full lines. Let's go next to Marie-Louise in Palo Alto. Hi, Marie-Louise. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you. Yes, I have been thinking a lot about fabric softeners, and many years ago I heard that it was being sort of spread in Sweden, do not use them because they could be carcinogenic. Now, I have not actually followed that, but, you know, if it softens the fabrics, it probably does something to one's body as well when one puts it on, the clothes or the sheets or whatever it may be. And I'm wondering if Dr. Bloom has looked at that at all. I'm curious about that.
Okay. Thank you, Marie-Louise. Dr. Bloom?
I haven't, but maybe Samara has. But I just wanted to correct one thing. What I had said previously is there are a handful of families of chemicals that are harmful, but not of chemicals. So there are, for example, 2,000 fluorinated chemicals in the family. You can identify the family, but there's certainly more than a handful of chemicals. I just wanted to be clear.
Thank you. So a handful of families of chemicals.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
No, that's a very important distinction. Samara, have you looked at fabric softener?
That is a great question. We actually have looked at that class of cleaning products. And so fabric softeners are actually a type of product we really don't recommend using. Oftentimes, fabric softeners are made with a class of compounds called quats, or quaternary ammonium compounds. And these quats actually are considered asthmogens. And what an asthmogen is it's something that can cause asthma to develop in an otherwise healthy person, and it can also exacerbate cases of existing asthma. So quats are compounds we like people to avoid in products, and they've been found in fabric softeners. They add that softening quality to the products. They're also used in antibacterial products or disinfectant products. So, you know, we want people to avoid the potential for respiratory harm with those compounds. And also, your caller had referenced the concern about cancer. And while we can't say definitively that using a product one or two times will cause cancer, we do know that there are a number of ingredients and potential impurities in cleaning products that are associated with cancer. And we don't think those ingredients linked with cancer have any place in our cleaning products. You know, one particular chemical we found in some of the products in our recent spring analysis was formaldehyde, and that's a known carcinogen. It's also a respiratory irritant. So there are some troubling chemicals linked to cancer in cleaning products.
Are quats also found in antibacterial gels?
So are you referring to like hand sanitizer?
Hand sanitizer, or? Because I see it everywhere now. It's in so many grocery stores, and people use it when they go in and sometimes when they leave.
So our cleaning guide does not rate hand sanitizers, but we do look at disinfectant products, and we find that a very large portion of the disinfectant products use quats as their active ingredients. And we know the American Medical Association actually says that disinfectants and antibacterial products really have no benefit over plain soap and water. So we really encourage people to avoid those products and also sort of only use the product you need to get the job done. Often you know, a particular cleaning task doesn't require disinfection. It requires something milder, you know, not an acid-based cleaner for daily and regular use, and maybe saving those harsher chemicals for period for tasks where disinfection is really required.
Arlene, you've also looked at quats, and I also wonder what's in soap when you use public bathrooms, because that soap is often pink.
Well, one of the classes or families of chemicals of concern is triclosan and triclocarban, and those are antimicrobials. And as Samara said, soap, plain soap and water is much better than having an antimicrobial in hand soap. And because antimicrobials are also, these are also pesticides, they have to be labeled. So it turns out that things like Colgate Total toothpaste and most antimicrobial soap do have triclosan and or triclocarban in them. And you can see that on the label. Just to say, the hand sanitizer that's plain alcohol shouldn't be harmful. So, you know, those little alcohol hand sanitizers should be fine. So you can look on the label. And, you know, I was really, when I learned that my daughter was using Colgate Total toothpaste, and there it was, I think it's 0.5% if I remember correctly. That might not be right. So triclosan and triclocarban are well avoided. And these chemicals also, when you have halogens, chlorine, bromine, or fluorine bonded to carbon, you have a bond that is not natural to any mammalian biochemistry, so our bodies just don't know what to do with these kinds of molecules. They can cause allergic reactions, and many are associated with health harm. Wow. So these are the kinds of ways, I think, as a chemist, that one can learn a little bit of chemistry about these families, understand why certain ones are harmful, and then really avoid them when there's transparency. That's pretty basic. But if things are pesticides or pharmaceuticals, they do have to be listed. So some things are listed on the labels.
All right. Well, thanks again for calling in, Marie-Louise. Let's go next to Denny in Richmond. Hi, Denny. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks again, Rose, for taking my call. I wanted to update you guys on the lawsuit against Lumber Liquidators that we've talked about before, about formaldehyde and Chinese laminate flooring that was featured on 60 Minutes, to reinforce the points that Arlene and everybody's been making about getting an appropriate warning at the point of sale. And unfortunately, I have to tell you that on Monday, the judge in our Proposition 65 case against Lumber Liquidators was dismissed, because the judge decided that consumers don't need to have a warning given at the point of sale. It's okay to bury it on the second page of an invoice, and they don't get it at point of decision. And, of course, we're going to appeal that and fight that. But I really want to reinforce that's a key thing. When people are buying something, they need to have a clear and present warning, which luckily for us in California, unlike in any other state in the country, is required by Prop 65, which I would like to remind you was a ballot initiative passed by the people of California. And despite $30 million being spent against us, or $30,000, in opposition, we won 60-30%.
Well, thank you for calling in on this, Denny. So just to give a little background, in 2014, Global Community Monitor conducted independent tests of fluorine sold by Lumber Liquidators. It's made in China, and according to their website, test results showed average initial formaldehyde exposure dozens of times above the level requiring a warning label under Prop 65. Tests also showed that the laminate fluorine exceeds California Air Resource Board formaldehyde standards by several times on average. And as Denny said yesterday, Lumber Liquidators, the stock actually rose after the judge made the favorable ruling in the case against Lumber Liquidators. So, Arlene, what are the implications of this ruling?
Well, I think this is a long-term issue. Transparency and information for consumers, and this is a little step backwards. You know, I'm a mountain climber, and when you climb mountains, you just have to keep plodding upward. And sometimes, you know, there are avalanches and storms, but you just have to keep moving upward. And I feel like we are moving towards a summit of better transparency, more information, you know, less harmful chemicals. So it's a setback, but the work will go on.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in with that update, Denny, and please keep us updated on this issue. Let's go next to Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Well, great. Well, I did want to make a reference to Prop 65, and that is good luck getting it enforced. I've had similar problems down here in Palo Alto where I live, and all they need to do, all the companies need to do is give a warning. I mean, they can continue to use carcinogenic chemicals like diesel. This is not indoor stuff that you were talking about, but all they have to do is give you a warning and then they can continue to do what they're doing. And unless you've got a high-powered attorney or whatever, enough money to sue somebody, if you should suffer some damages or ill health, you're out of luck. I just wanted to ask a question about body burden with regard to these chemicals. Also wanted to raise the issue of indoor air quality. I live in a very heavily trafficked area, and the air that gets into my place is so dusty and dirty, it's ridiculous. So you may have stuff with products you're using, but you're breathing this air that's coming in from exhaust, whatever, and that indoor air quality is clearly a problem. I've developed multiple chemical sensitivities as a result of exposure to a chemical called toluene diisocyanate. And I'll tell you, in Palo Alto, we just got some furniture in a public place, and I've had to fight the city over that. That kind of furniture was bought probably somewhere in the east or whatever, and they just said, oh, no, it's not a problem. So I had to fight with the city to get them to do that. But you can buy that stuff, and it'll come into your house. You have it. You're going to be breathing it, and it's just going to add to your body burden. So I'm not sure exactly where I'm going with it. It's just that we're swimming in a sea of chemicals, and unfortunately, it's too bad that Prop 65 says you can't use these chemicals. Not just a warning that you're going to get them, but that you can't use them. So this is a huge problem, and I'm surprised that more people aren't sicker than they are, given the amount of chemicals we're exposed to.
Well, thank you. Arlene, do you have any advice for people specifically with chemical sensitivities? And at what point do we realize that we have chemical sensitivities? Are there tests for this?
Well, I'm not an expert on chemical sensitivities, but I do think in the big picture, we have to ask, how many chemicals do we really need in our products? You know, all industries have this idea of a growth curve where they keep growing, and the chemical industry would like, you know, to keep doubling their sales every few years. But the reality is, more chemicals might be good for the chemical industry, but is it good for the health of our population? And I think that the time really has come to only use chemicals when we really need them. And I think if we can reduce the use of chemicals to where we need them, then we can be healthier. And I think the planet can kind of recover, because I think there is an assault on our whole planet and everyone's health. You know, a number of health problems that are associated with chemical exposure, cancer, infertility, neurological impairments in our kids, all these things have been going up a lot at the same time as the production and use of the chemicals that cause them have gone up. I mean, you can't make a direct correlation, like you have cancer and you have a cancer-causing chemical in your body. You can't know that that's the reason. Right. But across the population, the increased use of these chemicals is causing an increase in health problems. And as I said, I believe if just the question, do we really need this function or this chemical, given the potential for harm? In many cases, the answer is we do not need it. And I think that question can be used to reduce the use overall, and that protects everyone's health and wildlife, and especially people with chemical sensitivities.
Well, and if you look at what's happening in Europe, it really doesn't have to be this way. We talked about this yesterday, but the European Union has banned the use of 1,300 chemicals in cosmetic products. Here in the U.S., the FDA has banned fewer than a dozen. And so the same company is making a clean product in Europe and making a toxic product in the United States. So what are your thoughts on that, Arlene? Because a lot of people say, well, if they're banning it in Europe, why can't they ban it here? Or why can't they make a safer product here in the U.S.?
And that comes down to our lack of overall federal regulation, which, as you said, you talked about on Monday. I have a slightly more optimistic tilt on all this, I suppose, because I think the chemical industry totally wants to sell more chemicals. That's their job, to sell chemicals and make a profit. But the users of chemicals, and by that I mean the manufacturers, the retailers, companies who are big purchasers, they have no benefit putting toxic chemicals in their products. And indeed, when they're educated and they learn that certain chemical families are harmful, they can make choices not to use them. And I think that is starting to happen. I'm not going to mention brands or companies, but a lot of our biggest retailers and manufacturers are publicly announcing that they're stopping the use of whole families of harmful chemicals. And, you know, we're hoping that there's some leaders now who are doing this, and we're hoping that a lot of other companies will follow suit. Because, again, I think the big picture is only use chemicals when you really need them.
We also talked about the class issue yesterday, and I want to bring that up today. Because if you are low income, I'm thinking about the dollar store. I mean, I've gone into dollar stores, and there are so many products you can use to clean your bathroom or your kitchen, for example. And a recent study by the Campaign for Healthier Solutions released a report and found that over 81% of products in the dollar store contain at least one hazardous chemical above levels of concern. So can you talk about that, Samara?
Absolutely. Their findings actually parallel what we're finding in our analysis for our spring update of our Guide to Healthy Cleaning, and you can actually look up specific products in our guide by going to awg.org/cleaners. And so we're finding large groups of hazardous chemicals as well. We know that there are a number that are linked to respiratory irritation and asthma. There are some ingredients that are linked to cancer. We also know there's ingredients that can be sensitizing and that can cause skin allergies. So a few of these really hazardous chemicals are quats and that family of quaternary ammonium compounds that I referenced on the call earlier. Also, we have chemicals like sodium borate or boric acid, and it's also referred to as borax, and that's commonly used, and we know that that can disrupt hormones and can be a respiratory irritant. We have a slew of chemicals in fragrance, and a number of those chemicals originate in essential oils, and they can be allergens. So we do have a number of particularly concerning chemicals in cleaning products.
And Jose Bravo with the Campaign for Healthier Solutions says people struggling to make ends meet are confined to shopping at the dollar stores. We're already affected by pollution and lack of adequate medical care, and now we're filling our homes and our bodies with chemicals released from dollar store products. This needs to stop. We also talked yesterday about the green label, the natural label. Samara, can you talk about that? And when you look at products, for example, on the Environmental Working Group's list that are safer, are they affordable? Because yesterday we talked about the fact that, yes, you can find body products that are under $10 that don't have a lot of these toxic chemicals in them.
So you bring up an interesting point. Right now, actually, in California, we're really at a pivotal point where manufacturers have an opportunity to improve their disclosure. We have a number of leaders who are moving toward more complete disclosure, and a lot of those products are so-called green. We have, obviously, some products at the dollar store, some budget products, where disclosure's probably lacking more so than among the so-called green brands. And so we have, you know, there's obviously some misrepresentation that does go on whereby you can use some misleading terms like non-toxic or natural or green, and that can actually be hiding a number of hazardous chemicals. So there is a great deal of that, but you also have green brands that are truly making safer formulas and fully disclosing their ingredients. But, you know, the point being raised about dollar store, you know, you generally are not finding the more disclosed brands at those locations, and you're particularly, you know, you're finding less disclosed products that might just list something like surfactant, and that can hide any number of ethoxylated chemicals with impurities linked to cancer, for instance.
And what about affordability for the products that are cleaner?
So I would say people are sensitive to price when it comes to cleaning products. A lot of the brands that are doing a really good job at making safe formulas and disclosing are actually available now at some major retailers, places like Target and places that are available and affordable to the masses are now carrying a lot of these brands that are leading the way. It's like Seventh Generation.
That is Samara Geller, data analyst with the Environmental Working Group. Dr. Arlene Bloom is founder of the Green Science Policy Institute. Today we are talking about chemicals lurking in our homes and safer alternatives. If you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Arlene, you brought up stain repellents earlier in this show and Scotchgard. And we have an email from Mary who says, if you're talking about Scotchgard treated fabrics, for example, on a couch cover, can that be laundered out of the fabric? I know a lot of people who buy baby clothes and they kind of smell weird. They say that if they wash them 3 times, that chemical will eventually seep out of the product. Is that true?
Well, it really depends on the chemical and how permanently it's attached. So an interesting distinction is between monomers. Mono means one. And monomers go into products, they come out. Like the flame retardants in Scotchgard are actually monomers, and they do come out. Polymer means many. So when you put a whole bunch of molecules together, you get a polymer. And, for example, Gore-Tex and Teflon, which are made from the same chemical as Scotchgard. Gore-Tex and Teflon are polymers, and during the manufacture, they're harmful, but when you're actually using them, they shouldn't be too harmful. So when people say, I have a Teflon fry pan or a Gore-Tex jacket, should I throw it away? I say, well, don't throw it away, but don't buy another one. While you're using it, it shouldn't be a problem, but the manufacturer is. And the chemical, the monomer, which is what Scotchgard was, is that same molecule that has such strong bonds that it never breaks down for geologic time, like a million years. So I think it's a very serious decision to make chemicals that never break down, that are toxic, and we should only use them when we really, really need them.
And what if you do buy clothing, for example, for a baby, and it smells? What should you assume at that point?
Well, many of these things don't have any smell. The flame retardants, the stain repellents. You know, people write me and they say my couch smelled. It's the flame retardants. And I'm like, well, you probably have flame retardants. But the things that smell are called volatile. And that means they come out of the product very easily and they stay in the air. And some of those are harmful, some aren't. The organic solvents tend to be volatile, things like benzene, toluene, and they are harmful. So smell is not a great thing, that new car smell, but actually the chemicals we consider among the most harmful, most of them have no odor. So odor is not a definition of harm.
And a few people are calling in saying they feel a little overwhelmed by all the information, not surprising. What's the best way to go about tackling this issue, Arlene, when you're looking at the various products in your home?
Well, two ways are to look at databases, like the excellent one from EWG that Samara is working on. And so you can look up products. And then we, of course, recommend if you go to our website, which is greensciencepolicy.org, you can learn about six families of chemicals that we think contain a majority of the harmful chemicals, and once you understand that stain repellents and other very similar products are harmful, you can say look for fluoro. These are fluorinated on labels. At least in cosmetics, it will say fluoro, and then you can avoid those products. Triclosan and triclocarban, which is another class of concern. These are the antimicrobials. They're again listed on labels. Usually, they can be avoided. And flame retardants, you can't always avoid them. But I think, so we kind of come at it as chemists. We want people to understand some of the chemistry and why they just want to avoid these whole families. Mm. So these are two ways, kind of the understanding of the chemicals, which can be hard for consumers who don't have that interest, and then going to good databases like EWG has.
And Samara, what are your thoughts on the best way to tackle this without feeling completely overwhelmed?
Well, I would say by starting by checking out our guide. We just updated for spring, and we have over 400 new brands and products. So it's chock full of information on ingredients and on the product harms. However, if you have existing products at home that you might be concerned about, we really encourage you to take those precautions if there's potentially hazardous ingredients and read those labels, check the warnings, and, wear gloves or goggles if necessary, especially if you're using a harsh chemical. Open the window, really ventilate so that you're exposing yourself less to those air pollutants that can get trapped indoors when you're cleaning. And take sort of a less is more approach. You often don't need a harsh chemical to clean with. You can make your own DIY natural products very affordably and easily. We have a guide for DIY products on our website, ewg.org. And just take care. Oftentimes, you might not know you're exposing a loved one to the pollutants in cleaning products, things like essential oils.
And those resources are also at yourcallradio.org. Samara Geller is data analyst with the Environmental Working Group, and Dr. Arlene Bloom is founder of the Green Science Policy Institute. Thank you both for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, we'll continue our week-long series on toxic chemicals by focusing on our food system. We are exposed to a cocktail of chemicals, additives, and pesticides in the food we eat. More than 6,000 chemicals are used to harvest, process, and package our food. So what toxins are used to produce our food, and what are their health and environmental effects? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, Matt Martin is executive producer, and Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.